Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division for this Tuesday, March 5th. I'm the Chair, Frank Kornstein, and I'd like to welcome everybody. We have a number of bills on the agenda, so I'd like to get going. We do not have a quorum quite yet, so we'll hold off on the minutes. Our first, we have a trio of bills from Representative Lesch. I don't know if he's here yet, so any word on if he's on his way, we'll hear them, but otherwise, I don't see Representative Moeller either. So, or Representative Considine. All right, well, let's see. Representative Cagle's on the committee, but she's not quite here yet. So we'll just hold for a second and wait for our office. Sure, it was sort of an open forum, Representative Torkelson. I'd like to call on Representative Torkelson for some time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The rumor mill has been quite active overnight, and apparently there's an effort to move a bill in the Senate that has some deputy registrar funding in it. And if I'm not mistaken, I have the companion to that bill here in the House, and I guess this is as good a time as any to request a hearing on it.
I will commit we will be hearing a deputy registrar bill very shortly. And, you know, hopefully in the next week. Do you know if they have a that bill has to go anywhere else, or is it a straight-up transportation bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think on this particular topic I've told you everything I know.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Chair Torkelson. I did see Representative Lesch.
Oh, right
here. We're ready.
That's great news, Chair. Okay.
Well, welcome to the committee, Mr. Chairman. You have a trio of bills. Let's see. Do you have? We would like to. Well, would you like to have 1061 heard first? That's the driver's license suspension bill.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, I will move House File 1061 and. That will be going to the general register from here, so we're in great shape.
Standing. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1061 stops driver's license suspensions when the only violation is failure to pay traffic tickets. So it eliminates the additional suspension period after paying a ticket for driving after suspension, so people who pay their fine can get back to work. And it maintains collections processes so people are still accountable for their tickets and does not impact suspensions for DWIs, reckless driving, habitual offenders. So, members, this is something that was in the omnibus prime last year. It's pretty consensus. And the issues that we've had is we have Mary Ellen Heng here, who's a prosecutor in Minneapolis, actually the prosecutor in Minneapolis, right? I was just a line cook in St. Paul. But I handled a lot of these, and every time this happens, you know, people get suspended on top of being suspended or revoked on top of being suspended. And there's this cycle of criminal law consequences that, especially for someone who's poor, which is usually the case for these situations, they just can't get out of it. And I remember at least up until, I don't know how many years ago it was, once you got your fourth one, we were doing jail time, like 15 days in jail. So I sent in to people, some people that just kept racking these up. And yes, they're, you know, not the smartest to recur, but I mean, it was absolutely a consequence of poverty that I saw. And so that's one thing that I think we can hope to address this. And I don't know, did you want to talk about amendments now?
Yeah,
I know Representative Kosnick has
sure,
one.
Sure, right. I understand Representative Kosnick has one, and then you have one to his. So I think what we should do now, Chairman Lesch, is get your bill in the shape you'd like the committee to consider.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kosnick's bill was something that was highlighted by Representative O'Neill, who was sitting right there when she brought this up when we were in what committee? Was it my committee? Judiciary? It was my committee. She was sitting right there, and she said, why? If you have these suspensions on top of revocations on top of suspensions, Last summer, apparently, I heard that the department started stacking the fees. So if you had multiple ones, it was $20 a pop, and then you had to pay like $60 if you had three to, I don't know, reinstate you three times or something, which was kind of silly, I thought. But this just says, no, we reinstate you one time. And that's Representative Kosnick's amendment, and Representative O'Neill thought it was a good idea, and I think most of the committee did on both sides last time, too, so Representative Kosnick.
Representative Kosnick, do you want to move your amendment or have any additional comments?
No, Mr. Chair, other than it's nice to have an attorney present when you present your amendment, so you don't have to say much, so thank you. I appreciate it.
You'll see my bill, Representative Kosnick. It'll be really
okay.
Cheap.
Is there discussion to the Kosnick A4 amendment? Did you officially move your amendment?
That sounds like
I just want to make
sure. I thought I did, but
okay.
Just to clarify for the record, Mr. Chair, I would move the A4 amendment to House File 1061.
Discussion to the A4? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the motion prevails. And I believe there's an additional amendment as well, the A5. And I can move that, Representative Lesch, if you'd like.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I will move the A5 amendment for the author, and if you want to explain what that one does.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So this replaces or payment of a fine in line 1.19 to match the existing statute. The point of it is to ensure that a person's license is not suspended if they miss the original 30-day deadline for payment of a payable misdemeanor traffic ticket, or they get a letter alerting them that their license will be suspended if they don't either pay or schedule a court date, and then they pay the fine but do not appear in court, then you got this catch-22. So it's meant to address that technical donut hole, I guess.
Good. So is there discussion or questions on the A5? Okay. Then we'll vote on that. To the A5 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Now we have House File 1061 as amended in the shape the author would like to have it considered. And I see you have a witness.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Hang is here from the City of Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Ellen Hang. I am the criminal deputy for the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. I've been a prosecutor now for almost 22 years at the city level, so we do the misdemeanor prosecutions, and I've seen a lot of driving cases. Over the course of my career, generally about 30% of our caseload is spent on these types of cases where there's nothing more than just the license suspension. And what I've seen is that I don't think suspending someone's license because they can't pay a fine really enhances public safety. I think you could even argue it hurts public safety because oftentimes these drivers, they have to drive. I mean, we'd like them to not drive when their license is suspended, but the reality is they need to get to work. They need to take their children to daycare and school. They need to get to their appointments just like everyone else, and they frankly just don't have many options. And it's even outside of Minneapolis where we have really great public transportation. In some of the outer counties, they don't have that. And so it really puts people in a real bind of, do I break the law to do what I need to do in order to make money, to be accountable and pay my fines and fees, or do I just stop going to work? And we all know where that leads. Tickets can add up very quickly. If you miss your ticket because you can't afford to pay it, they add on late fees and then collection fees and delinquency fees, and depending on how many counts you were charged with, I've seen one ticket equal $800, $900 alone. In the interim, before we kind of came to this conclusion for this fix, we have been a big supporter of the Driver Diversion Program, which is helping people pay off their fines and fees, and I have seen people come through for me to approve in that program owing $10,000 or more dollars just from traffic tickets that have built up over time. My office supports this bill. I've spoken to the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. They support this bill. What we want to focus on as prosecutors is driving conduct. I want to spend my resources on people that are out there driving distracted, texting while driving, running red lights, driving drunk. I don't want to spend my resources on people that are simply probably, in a lot of cases, driving law-abiding, you know, obeying all the traffic laws, but the officer's able to run their plate and see they're suspended and pull them over simply because they're trying to get to their job so they can pay off their bills and pay their tickets. My time is much better spent focused on those bad drivers than the people who simply are just too poor to pay their tickets. So we fully support this bill, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Ms. Hank? Okay. Discussion. Oh, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, you know, we considered this issue last year, I believe, and it was in the omnibus bill. You made some amendments today. Are there other changes from last year's language?
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I don't think so. Can I just do a phone a friend real quick? Oh, no, my wife just texted me. No. There's no changes, and I believe her.
That's very smart, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Representative Lesh, that's very smart of you to believe her. That's
I find that out more and more every year, Representative Torkelson.
Likewise, in my own similar circumstances, although my wife does not text me regularly during during committee hearings.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I'm not sorry.
Further discussion? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, I think I heard you say earlier on in your testimony that you don't believe that we should eliminate people's ability to drive because they're unable to pay a fine and that it doesn't really enhance public safety, and I think that's there. How do you feel about unpaid parking tickets?
Representative Lesh.
Or that was that to me, Ms. Hang?
Testifier.
Okay, sorry, Ms. Hang.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think a parking violation is even more so. Parking violations, we have parking rules for a reason, obviously, and we want people to obey the parking rules. But unless you're parking literally blocking traffic in the middle of the street, parking at an expired meter is not, you know, doing anything for, it's not harming public safety. It's wrong, and you should be able to pay those, but do I think that someone should, if what you're asking me is should they have license suspensions for not paying parking tickets? No. I think with all of these tickets, what's important to remember is there will still be some ramifications to the person if they are not able to pay their fines and fees or they don't pay them. They still ultimately end up in the collections process, and hopefully by lessening some of this, we won't have people owing so much money that they can't pay them off when they want to be responsible. But there still is a consequences. Unpaid parking tickets, they go to collections, and that's going to have its own consequence for the person. And with parking tickets right now, if you have five or more, your car can be towed, and I think that's a sufficient response for people that don't pay their parking tickets.
One more follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and just comment, and that is kind of my concern, too. And last week we just heard a bill that I in this committee in which it gave the commissioner the ability to revoke somebody's driver's license for unpaid parking tickets. And I thought that was very egregious because of the same reasons that you talk about. There are other consequences and other ways we did it. And it doesn't have anything to do with safety of driving, which really is the premise for having a driver's license. So thank you for your opinion there.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion to House File 1061 as amended? Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, to Representative Torkelson's question earlier, I do think there are some sections that were not included in Senate File 3656 last year. So just so that the committee is aware, I was just doing a quick review, and from my recollection as well as taking a look, I think Sections 5 and 6 reflect new language. Section 5 lays out some reporting requirements. There's some similar data collection in Section 6. And then somewhat to Representative Petersburg's point, there is a difference in what came out of the Conference Committee report last year versus what's in the language here on parking violations and the prohibition on suspensions for parking violations. You can see that on 3.26 to 3.29.
Members, is everyone clear on the changes? Representative Runbeck.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Then I'd like to ask the author, those two sections on reports. What is the real benefit or purpose in doing reports?
Representative Lesch.
Collecting data and...
I'm sorry. Could you
repeat the question, Representative Lesch?
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's two reports required to the Public Safety and Transportation Committees. I mean, it's gathering a lot of data regarding driver's license issued, suspended, and revoked, broken down by county. I mean, do we learn anything from that? Is that going to be useful?
Representative Lesch.
Well, this, Mr. Chair and Representative Rebeck, this was two separate bills last year. The reporting bill was a separate provision. I believe it was only the first part of this that made it in Omnibus Prime. Advocates of this, we have supported the collection of that data just to see if this is a useful endeavor for us to continue down this path. And part of the reason for it, and Ms. Hank can correct me on it, is the massive amount of court resources and court time that we use for some of these what are ultimately petty and not dangerous people to ensure whether or not we're going on the right path. So maybe Ms. Hang has another answer for that.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that data can be useful. Part of the reasoning behind adding that language is we have tried to get the data, and it's very difficult to get the data. And I think, like I said, I've been in the world of citations for over 20 years, and you think – it's the lowest level crime, a petty misdemeanor to misdemeanor, yet it is often the most confusing process to be involved in the court. And I can show you my process map someday. If you don't believe me, it's quite it's kind of sad and scary how crazy it is just with a parking ticket or any sort of traffic ticket. But because it's so layered, there are lots of reasons why someone may be suspended or revoked, and you can be suspended and revoked on top of that and canceled. And I think what we're trying to get at is when we look at all of the thousands of people across the state that have either suspended, revoked, canceled, or some combination of that driver's license, we don't really know what the issue is. Why did that status happen in the first place? And actually trying to get at, you know, what was the first cause and then did it build on it like often happens. You know, you may get a suspended for not coming to court, and then, you know, it just builds and builds and builds and that. And so I think it would be helpful to know why are people losing their driving privileges. So we, again, you know, my whole focus is then I want to know which one of those are valid because they're public safety related versus, you know, related to someone's financial status.
Thank you for that. I'm going to allow one more follow-up, but then we do need to move on if you have a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it looks, I mean, it could be just one report over 8 years. There's eight, you know, you're talking about going back 8 years. I mean, should it be sunsetted and we gather the information, get a big look at it, and then do something with it? But we don't need to keep doing the reports, do we?
Briefly, Ms. Hank.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that's probably above my pay grade. I think that's for you. But I think, yes, there could be some merit in that kind of thinking. I think once we have it and we're able to analyze the data, hopefully we can look at it, we can formulate positive solutions, and then, yes, I don't know that we would need to keep collecting data. Sometimes we collect data just to collect it, and that's not a good use of time. So I think that could be something that is worthwhile considering.
Ms. Chair and Reps. Rundbeck, I think I probably kind of agree with you.
Okay,
is there any further discussion of House File 1061 as amended? Seeing none, you have final comments, Representative Lesch?
Mr. Chair, this is supported by, you know how when you get the right and left all the way come back in a circle on the back end? It's supported by all those folks, too. So you got ALEC, the National Center for State Courts, and the Southern Poverty Law Center have all support these types of initiatives and have documented the enormous economic and fiscal impact of suspending driver's licenses. So we appreciate the committee's support.
That is truly a unique bill.
It is.
So thank you, Chair Lesch. We will, I will renew my motion that House File 1061, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We're now on to the second of the trio of Chairman Lesch's bills, and this is House File 1060. And we will move that one to Ways and Means, and I will move that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So these bills, the three bills that you're hearing today, the first two were in 1061, and then the third one was 1060. These were all carried by Representative Zerwas last year. I was the second author, and Representative Zerwas, I think, is the second author on this year. I can't remember, but we supported these. You know, my initial deal with this, Mr. Chair, members, was having been a part. There are a few people around here. I think Representative Runbeck was around, Representative Nelson, Representative Houseman, and I think Representative Bernardi. When we did all the hack and slashing during the lean years of 2003 through 2011, we imposed fees. We did all kinds of weird stuff. But one of the things we did is we imposed these fees, this surcharge, and we increased the surcharge substantially. Whereby it increased the cost of a basic traffic ticket to about $130, which, you know, fines are supposed to be a penalty for bad conduct, not an opportunity to just feed government. That's what really bothered me about this. So this requires, the bill would require, would give the court discretion to reduce or waive the state surcharge. It doesn't mean it gets waived for everyone, but it offer a community service alternative or in cases of financial hardship, which they can't do now, members. For those folks who want to do community service to pay off their fines because they're that poor, and I see a lot of those, I have seen a lot of those folks in my courtroom, you can't do that. They say, no, you got to pay. And then they end up not paying, and then they get suspended again. So this adds language to the standard citation form notifying people of their right to ask for a reduction in the cost, and requires judges to consider that ability to pay. So clients who are eligible for a public defender have a greater than 50% default rate on this surcharge, which leads to collections process that is costly for individuals in the state. Right-sizing the fines for these people will lead to a lower default rate, fewer collection cases, and may even increase collection rates. So, and Mr. Chair, finally, I think one of the most important things is all those weird things that we did in those lean budget years, 2003, 2005, 2009, we did some stuff that we probably shouldn't have done, but we did it under the guise of making the budget balance. And now we're in a surplus, and I think we have an opportunity to reverse some of those errors, at least for the people who really need it, and that means people who are poor. So that's all I got right now.
Thank you. And I see you have one testifier.
All right.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Jeanette Berner. I'm the First Assistant Public Defender in Hennepin County. I appreciate the opportunity to speak here again. This is an initiative that we've been pushing forward as a joint initiative for 3 years, and I'm looking for this year to be the magic year. I've been practicing as a lawyer in Hennepin County for 25 years. I would like to give you a little bit of an overview of public defender clients. For the legal requirement to be public defender eligible is that you fall below the federal poverty guidelines, which means for a family of four, you earn less than $25,000 a year, or for an individual, less than $12,000 a year. But the reality is most of the clients that I represent or we represent in inner city districts are far more poor than that, often homeless, without a job, or underemployed. So to give you a little bit of a sense of which cases this applies to, it applies to all criminal cases that come to court and end up in a conviction. That means a person or a client that we have who goes to prison for life for a homicide has a $75 surcharge attached to their case. Likewise, a felony client who is charged with theft goes to the workhouse, can't work for a year as a consequence of their conviction, and then has to do treatment, owes a $75 surcharge. And then you have perhaps a trespasser who is convicted of a low-level misdemeanor, and they end up with that same $75 surcharge. I think you have to understand the fine system to understand why this has become a very inequitable system that really needs to be addressed. A fine is absolutely considered punishment within the judicial system, and it's punishment plain and simple. It means that the courts are required to use discretion, like they are in all punishment, in making a decision about a just outcome. They have to look at ability to pay. They have to look at the facts and circumstances before them. This surcharge has completely removed that ability for the court to be fair in assessing the individual before them. It has a tremendous impact, and it consistently has had, on poor people, because there is no ability for somebody who's completely without any money to pay this. And quite honestly, I think those of us in the system, and I think Ms. Hang would join me, we feel like it really affects the integrity of the process, because for the court not to consider the facts before him or her really does diminish the value of a criminal sentence. So to the state surcharge waiver, which is what we're addressing here today, just to remind you that it is mandatory, which means it's absolutely not waivable. There is absolutely nothing the court can consider with regard to the individual. It's an administrative add-on to a punishment. And importantly for those of us in this system, it tends to be a deal breaker. It delays the system because at the end of the day, that $75 is the reason the individual may not take a deal and resolve the case. As absurd as that might seem to you, that is the reality in which we practice. It takes resources to administer. You heard a little bit about that. And the most absurd part, I think, and I hope you would join me in thinking this, is that it can be more than the original fine. The consequences of the surcharge are more significant than the fine and the sentence. And here's an example. Recently, we had a client who had six cases. They were trespassing cases for riding the light rail train. They came into court. This individual was trying to address some of her concerns, and she was reaching out for social services. The city attorney realized that this was a person who they wanted to invest in, and that person was willing to take that opportunity. City attorney offered a generous offer of pleading to two, dismissing four cases, no additional time, follow the terms and condition of probation, that being don't commit any new charges, attainable. Get a chemical dependency treatment, attainable. Don't, follow, work with your social service provider, attainable. And then, of course, the fine. You can do 2 days of sentence to service, attainable. And at the end of the day, it was a $75 surcharge on each case, $150, completely unattainable. And
Can you wrap up a little bit?
Yep, I can. I'm sorry. So I would just ask that you consider that this process for fines, for surcharges, mirror the processes that we currently have for fines, and that you allow that to be employed statewide and be equitable.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there questions of either the author or the testifier? Okay. Representative Lesh, do you want to close up? Any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't know.
Okay, well.
I mean, I want to close up, but I don't even know.
Okay, well, members, we're now ready to vote on House File 1060, and I will renew my motion. And this one actually will go to Ways and Means. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So thank you very much, Ms. Vayner, as well.
Thank you, Mr.
And now we have your last bill, Chairman Lesh.
Yep.
And that is House File 898. And this is the License Reinstatement Diversion Pilot Program. And I will make a motion that House File 898 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee as well. And I'd like to explain your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is the making the diversion program permanent. We have had this patchwork of enabling diversion programs, Mr. Chair and members, for years. It's got to be like 10 years or something. How long is it?
Started in 2009.
Well, 10 years, I was right. Okay. So about 10 years, because of the glut of these issues that we've had with the suspended revoked driver's licenses. And they've flooded the courts. They've caused us such headaches that eventually prosecution authorities began working with folks, independent providers of programs that would allow these people to get valid, get on a payment plan, have a valid license, and move forward. It's been a consensus item for years, as long as it's been in place. I know that I work with Jessica McConaughey at the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. I know that Mary Ellen Hang is working on it in Minneapolis, because obviously that's where we get a big chunk of these. But you've got folks in the suburbs and greater Minnesota that are doing it as well. So this just says, you know, let's stop with the various extensions or changes and just make it permanent. Since they've been doing a good job, let's allow them to keep doing it to take the burden off the court system, get people valid, and move it on.
Thank you. It looks like you have a testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Please state your name for the record, and I just wanted to welcome you to the committee. We have a couple more bills with a number of people that have shown up to observe and participate in those, so we'd like to keep the testimony as brief as possible. So welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is David Skillbred. I'm representing Divergent Solutions here today. The previous testimony by the prosecutors, I think, made a huge and wonderful argument for this bill, as did our chair and author. And I'll notice that we have three co-authors that are sitting on this committee as well. The program that was created by prosecutors in 2009 is now 10 years old, and the program basically did this. It allowed participants to get their license reinstated. They would show proof of insurance, take classes, pay back their delinquent fines on a monthly payment plan based on their income, and not have any more citations. If they did that, then they could drive legally during their time in this program. The program does not receive any government funding. It's all funded by participants, and it is supported by a long, long list of people. Your handouts have that list. The bill proposes four changes. It creates a process whereby DVS could charge and accept modest payments for reviewing applications. Second, today, if you get a citation where there isn't a program in place, a city or a county, you are not eligible to participate in the program. So the second change would be that we would allow prosecutors to request an individual be reviewed by DVS and participate. And secondly, that a judge would be able to recommend and request an individual to apply. Thirdly, the current law requires participating counties and cities to provide biennial program reports. Divergent Solutions has been doing this for 9 years. So we just decided to put it into law, and that way if a city or a county is deciding to join the program, it's one less thing for them to do and worry about. Finally, it repeals this June 30 sunset of this year. This has proven its value, and I'll tick off some facts to show that. In 2009, the pilot program began in 5 cities. Today, prosecutors from 142 cities and 19 counties have chosen to author it. As of 12/31/18, the program has collected over $9.4 million in delinquent fines and fees from their participants and returned all of those to the state. As of 12/31, it has helped 6,693 individuals earn their full driving privileges back and kept them out of court. And finally, it makes our roads safer, it promotes judiciary efficiency, and it increases the number of insured drivers on the road. As Mark Rubin from the St. Louis County Attorney's Office writes, without question, this program should be available statewide for the benefit of not just drivers who's lost their driving privileges, but for all of us. And with that, I'll end my testimony.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Skillbred? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quickly, because this deals with being able to track a driver's license and so forth, do we know if there's been any issues with the new rollout of the Real ID driver's license program and whether or not that's working satisfactory to be able to accommodate these issues?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll let the CEO answer that question, okay?
So we do have an additional testifier, the CEO of Divergent Solutions, coming. Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Atkinson?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Scott Atkinson, CEO of Divergent Solutions. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'd like to answer your question for you. The license under the diversion program is just a standard driver's license, so it does not affect, has no effect at all, if I'm answering your question correctly, if I hear your question correctly.
No, actually, I'm not sure, because from this point forward, we're going to be doing Real ID license, which is a new system. Mm-hmm. So I'm inquiring as about whether or not the new system will be able to do all the tracking that was necessary to accommodate this particular program.
Mr. Atkinson.
I can't speak for DVS, of course, Mr. Chairman, Representative. I can't speak for DVS, but we work very, very closely with the Department of Vehicle Services, Driver's License Division, and they have not brought up any concern at this time.
Thank you. Do you have further testimony, or
we'd just like
to answer questions?
Oh, if you don't mind, we'll just like to run just a two-minute voice message left for the Lakeville Police Department, and they were kind enough to send it to us so that we could listen to it also.
Okay. Proceed.
Is it working? That'd be a 2.5 minute video.
Okay.
Voice now.
And then we'll wrap pretty quickly after that. Do we have anyone from Minute in the audience?
That's for you. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
There were some girls in a stone face at that joke.
Yeah.
So can you maybe recap a little about very briefly what this audio is?
Sure. The audio, this individual actually called 911. And to say thank you very much to the police officer who wrote her a citation for driving after revocation citation, and wanted to thank the police officer because at the same time he had given out an orange card, which gives our phone number out for the driving diversion program. And she just wanted to call up and thank him for writing that citation so that she could get into the program, and we did get her licensed right away to help her out.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to hear that at some point. Maybe we can provide a link for members.
No, we can do that.
Okay, is there a discussion to House File 898? Yes, Vice Chair Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I used to be the mayor of Shakopee, and we were very involved with this program. Mm-hmm. I talked to our police chief about it, and he has nothing but fantastic things to say. And thank you very much for the work being done.
Commissioner Hornstein and Representative Tabaki. Listen, I appreciate that because you hired one of my employees and she's not one of your officers.
Excellent. All right. Well, is there any further discussion to House File 898? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 898 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Chairman Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Our next bill on the agenda is House File 932. This is Representative Moeller's legislation. This is Representative Moeller's first bill before the Transportation Finance and Policy Division, and we...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For the record, she did bring treats.
Yes, I see. Very good. Thank you for that, Representative O'Driscoll. So, members, this is known as... House File 932 is also known as Mitchell's Law, and this motion will go to Ways and Means, and... from there, I believe it needs to go to Judiciary, and we'll leave it at that. But we'll let the Ways and Means Chair refer that to memo. So, by memo. So, I will formally move House File 932 to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Mueller, you could explain your bill briefly, and then I also know you have an author's amendment as well. We could take the amendment first, or you could go over your bill, whatever you would prefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we could do the author's amendment
okay.
first. It's the A1 amendment.
Good. Why don't you explain the A1 amendment to the committee?
Yep. The A1 amendment is just a minor change based on consultation with the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Are there any questions about the A1? We have a couple of other amendments. We'll do those after testimony. Okay. I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. The motion prevails. House File 932 as amended is before us.
Thank
Welcome
you.
To the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this bill, House File 932, the idea for this bill and really the advocacy around it from the Brain Injury Alliance is a result of what happened to Mitchell Radzij, who lives in my community. I don't know if I mispronounced your last name, Mitchell.
Raji.
And Mr. Raji lives in my community, and he's going to be telling you his compelling story in just a minute. But just to kind of go over the basics of the bill, this bill allows but does not require a person who applies for a driver's license to provide names and contact information to the Department of Public Safety of up to 3 emergency contacts. That information would then be accessible in the event of emergency to law enforcement or first responders, who would then be able to notify those emergency contacts. This bill does have bipartisan support. And, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier now.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Mitchell Raji. And hello and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First, let me explain what I would like change. Then I'll explain the situation behind my request. I was a 25-year-old, played sports in high school, and moved out to the oil patch in North Dakota. At 9:01 a.m. on May 1st, 2015, running low on sleep, I crossed the center line near Harvey, North Dakota. My Pontiac Vibe was no match for a semi-tractor trailer hitting each other on a head-on collision. The emergency team had to cut my car into pieces to remove my unconscious body. Had ambulance to Harvey, North Dakota Hospital, and then to Minot Hospital. I had broken bones, shattered knees, and a crushed skull. The hospital chaplain, after made many phone calls because of my grave condition, and after 8.5 hours, was able to reach my parents at 5:30 p.m. Being only told to get to Minot as fast as he can, asking for details, the chaplain was only able to repeat it, get to Minot, because it was a 9-hour car drive to Minot. They opted to fly. Arriving at the hospital at 12:30 a.m. on May 2nd, 13 hours after the car accident occurred. After 212 days in hospital, I was able to come home. I ask for your support, and if you have any questions, I will do my best to answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ezek, for sharing that very important and harrowing story. As a parent, I just can't imagine what your parents went through, and it's a miracle that you welcome them.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that you're here. And
thank you.
Thank goodness for these miracles that we face. But hopefully through your legislation and your courage and your willingness to come here, this will be something that will be helpful to many others who face these situations.
Yeah.
So with that, I would ask the committee if they have any questions. Representative Hausman, did you?
Just notice we have two amendments.
Yes, we'll move to those if there are no further questions.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this, I don't know if DVS is here, but a question I have is just in my mind is putting these on, this information is with the new driver's license system. Is it capable of adding this on and doing this?
We have someone from Driver and Vehicle Services. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Carrie Briones. I'm the legislative analyst from DVS. And the question was whether we could put this. Could you repeat the question? Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
My question is whether the system is capable of adding this information and having it available as the bill asked for.
Chair and members, yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Seeing no further questions, and thank you, Mr. Ezek. And we have a couple of amendments. I believe they're from Representative Torkelson. If you want to share with the committee your ideas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment is before us. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, Mitchell, thank you for being with us today, and thank you for telling your story. We're going to get into some mechanics of the work we do here. It's no reflection on you or your idea. It's more a reflection on the busy work that we have to do here at the legislature to make sure that we do things as well as we can. So I want to again congratulate you on being here. Thank you for that. Mr. Chair and members, this seems to be the year of the driver's license and driver's license data, and we're dealing with this on a number of different bills as we work through this session. This particular amendment really is to emphasize the need to keep this data private. We've had a series of data breaches related to driver's license information, and so this would really just kind of put on the belt and suspenders as far as making sure that the data is kept as private as possible and protected. And then if it should be shared, that there be some penalty for those that might share this data inappropriately. And that's kind of the gist of the amendment. Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Ferguson, questions and, most importantly, comments from the author, I believe, unless the committee has any questions. Representative Molnar, what do you have thoughts about the A2 amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. I appreciate your intent behind that, but it's already covered by the bill. If members would look at line 2.27, this information is being classified as private data as defined in Chapter 13. And I did check, Chapter 13 does have privacy protections related to data classified like this. Specifically, Chapter 13.09 already provides for penalties. So because we're classifying this as private data, the protections in Chapter 13 will apply, and this amendment, I believe, is unnecessary.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did describe it as belt and suspenders because it perhaps does repeat to a certain extent what's already in the bill, but I still believe it would strengthen the bill and make the intention very clear that we want this data kept private and protected and that there are penalties involved should it be shared improperly.
Okay. Any further discussion on you? So the author is recommending...
Mr. Chair, I'm recommending a vote no on this, and I will say that I'd be happy to work with, I don't necessarily like this language, but maybe there's some other language that I could look at before it makes its next stop. But for purposes now, I would recommend a no vote on the A2.
Okay, is there further discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. But you have another one. Representative Torkelson,
an A3,
I believe.
Yes, the A3. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment is before us. Representative Torkelson.
This, again, deals with a potential data breach just really makes it clear that without informed consent of the individuals who are subject to the data, that this is classified as a data breach and consequences would result.
Discussion to the amendment or questions? Of the author of the amendment. And I'll hand it over to the author of the bill for her perspective and recommendation to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this amendment is related to another statute that's not cited in our bill, 13.055. I also believe it's unnecessary. I would note that there's another bill moving right now that we've already heard in the Civil Law Committee, House File 54, that's looking at Subdivision 1, Paragraph C already. And so I just don't believe that this is necessary, and discussions about 13.055 are already being had. So I would recommend a no vote on this as well.
Thank you, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a clarification, too. The data that's being provided to put on these licensed emergency contact, this is all voluntary, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, that's correct. This is all voluntary.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, even though it's voluntary, I don't think we necessarily want it distributed inappropriately. And it's never harmful to have things tucked into more than one spot as we work through our work here at the legislature. It's a good idea having it repeated sometimes gives it life rather than having it sidelined. So I would again encourage members to vote yes on the amendment.
Any final thoughts or questions or anything the author would want to add related to this amendment? Okay, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay, we're back to the bill, or is there any further discussion? Yes, Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this, I guess first I want to thank Representative Torkelson for making an effort to make sure that we are protecting data. And though this is, I've heard a couple times now, it's a voluntary, and I think it's a great idea. I'm just wondering, is there a period of time that data would follow that license, or is there an opt-out? And again, I don't know if that's within this committee's purview or if that's a question for the author or maybe somebody else, but the emergency contact data, one, I could see a time where possibly somebody thinks, okay, I want to list these three people here, and then, you know, maybe years go by and they decide that they don't want those people on there anymore. So what's the mechanism for opting out of that? And if they don't, are those three people that are listed in theory, would they follow that licensed person forever?
Representative Moeller.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Heinrich, that's a really good question. And I think one of the things I was wondering about is for driver's license renewals, if this information could be provided on the renewal form, and it is. And so I would say at least when you renew your license, you could provide updated information or new contacts, or say your emergency contact changed their phone number or, you know, their contact information. But as far as, like, being able to opt out, I guess I don't know if the person from DVS would be able to explain if you could go to Driver Motor Vehicle Services and ask that information be removed, you know.
phoning a friend here. All right.
Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name once again for the record.
Carrie Briones, legislative analyst for DVS. Thank you for letting me phone a friend. To your question, they would be able to do this at renewal time, and then also if they wanted to come in and get a duplicate, they could change the information at that time.
Representative Heinrich?
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. So if they wanted to just opt out completely, not change the information, are the records of those original contacts kept somewhere in a data lock box, so to speak? I mean, would that just be around forever, or is there a mechanism to erase that? I guess I don't know if that's a good question at this point, but if you could kind of address that. If somebody wanted to have that just erased, is that a possibility in the future?
Proceed.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I think that's good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Okay, is there any further discussion about? Yes, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry to extend this a little bit longer, but as we all know, our contact information certainly is subject to change over time. I think we've all experienced changes in email addresses, et cetera, that over time are no longer up to date and valid. Phone numbers, addresses even change over time. Is there any provision in this work, this bill, to assure that the data that's on the license is actually up to date and will do what it's supposed to should it be needed?
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chair, Representative, do you mean data on the license itself or the emergency contact data being up to date?
Well, I meant the emergency contact.
Okay. Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. And again, I think this has to do with the renewal. You can put those contacts again with their updated information. And I also think that's why, maybe you can speak to this, Mitchell, but the intent of having three emergency contacts as opposed to just one in case somebody's contact information does get changed or someone isn't reached, that's why we have the option of having up to three people listed here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
Representative Torkelson.
Representative, so but there's no requirement to update or check on the veracity of the information at the time of renewal or anything like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, no, there's not.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no additional comments, do you have any closing thoughts before we vote?
I do. I just want to really thank you. I really want to thank Mitchell for being here, all the advocacy work he's done. And I'll just say, as fate would have it, I dropped this bill on the anniversary of a death of a loved one in our family, a 19-year-old. And while the contact information wasn't something that impacted our family, I could have seen how that would have been really horrible for those parents not to know. And like I said, as fate would have it, that was the day that I dropped this bill. So this bill has a lot of meaning to me, too. And I really appreciate the work that the Brain Injury Alliance has done. And I really hope all of you will support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I would echo our gratitude to you, Mitchell, and to all of you in the Brain Injury Alliance who have done excellent work over many, many years on a variety of issues that have been before the Transportation Committee. So with that, members, I will renew my motion for House File 932 to be referred to the Ways and Means as amended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Mueller. Next bill on the agenda is House File 729. Before we do that, we do have a quorum, and we have a couple of sets of minutes before us, Representative Petersburg. We have March 1st and I believe February 26th. 28th. Sorry.
28th. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe we have all the attendance figures correctly. So unless we hear something different, I approve the February 28th.
The motion is to approve the February 28th and March 1st minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. So, Representative Considine, I saw him earlier. There he is. He's ready to roll. Uh, House File 729 does have some fiscal impact, so we will hold this in the committee for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Representative Considine, welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein.
And so, again, our motion is to lay this over for possible inclusion, and I know you have a couple of testifiers.
I do. This is a bill that deals with the compensation for the state troopers. They've just recently finished their last contract. They worked without a contract for 2 years, a year and a half.
Nearly 2 years.
Almost 2 years. Just point out that in February they had more trooper cars hit than they've ever had in a single month, and they have already exceeded the number that were hit last year in this early part of the year when most of us are getting off the road and finding a nice place to hold up. They're the ones that are going out and rescuing people on a regular basis. I don't believe, frankly, that we want to be in an adversarial contract negotiations with them, but I will turn that over now to my testifiers.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. And I don't know which one of you wants to go first. Okay, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Joe Dowell. I'm a trooper at the State Patrol and the president of the State Troopers Association. As the president of the Troopers Association, I represent the 529 dedicated, hardworking state troopers who provide assistance, education, and protection across Minnesota. And behind me, I'd like the troopers to stand up, please. They're easy to spot. They're in their maroon shirts that say State Trooper on them, just like all our squad cars. So this is just a small fraction of the members that are here just to hear the bell and hear our testimony. So thank you, troopers. I want to thank Representative Considine for being the chief author and the 34 other members of the House of Representatives who are also co-authors to what we call the Trooper Wage Disparity Bill. Today, I'm going to talk about how we got here, and then the Vice President of the Troopers Association, Trooper Mike Ledoux, will talk about the bill itself. And I just want to be very clear, both Mike and I are not disgruntled state troopers or state employees. We both have truly enjoyed our time as being state troopers, and we're both past Troopers of the Year. So far from being disgruntled employees, we truly love the State Patrol, but we're very concerned of what's happening. There's a wage disparity gap that's been growing for many, many years between ourselves and our comparables. And our comparables are local police departments. We're here in front of you because basically you folks are like our city council, our county boards. If we were local officers or sheriff deputies, you know, we would address that in front of those two bodies. But we rely upon you folks for everything. So, again, a big thank you to Representative Considine for being our chief author. So how did we get here? There's some packets that should have been handed out to all the representatives. Myself and Mike will refer to a few of those. If you ask many of your constituents, if you go back to your hometowns, I think they would assume that state troopers are probably near the top as far as pay. And it used to be that way back when Mike and I started. It is no longer that way. In 2002, troopers were paid roughly 99% of the average of the highest paid departments in the metropolitan area. By June 30, 2017, that's when our contract had expired, trooper pay had fallen to 88% of the average of the suburban police departments. Since 2002, metro area police officers' wages have risen by nearly 49%. In comparison, since 2002, trooper pay has risen by 32%. So the question is, what happened? Why? What caused this? And there's two reasons for it. The first one is we experienced 5 years of zero pay increases. 2003, 2004, 2009, 2010, and 2011. While other officers were getting small increases, they were bad economic times, we understand that, we were getting zeros. And as you know, you never really make up for zeros. It gets compounded. The other issue that we face is Minnesota Management and Budget, MMB's, principle of what we call pattern settlement. Pattern settlement is giving every state worker, no matter what their job classification is, the same pay increase. The problem with that is for our troopers, our comparable should be other police officers that have similar jobs to ours. State troopers' jobs are vastly different than those of other state workers. Like Representative Constantine mentioned, we've had 22 squad cars hit just in February. Or excuse me, 15 just in February. 22 just since the first year. And I can testify that because my squad car was one of them. Last year, Senator Benson addressed this issue on the floor of the Senate, in which she said, when other state contracts were in front of them for a vote, she said, and I quote her, "Our state troopers are falling behind in wages as compared to wages paid to local officers because of pattern settlement." The second thing I want to address with the committee is there is a recruiting and retention crisis in law enforcement. Our comparable groups for recruiting and retaining our troopers are the larger police departments. As has been well reported, there is a crisis in police recruitment and retention. That's both statewide and it's nationally. We even lost our top-notch state patrol recruiter to the private sector. And there's documents in your packets with a press conference that was held by the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. Big cities, small cities, they're all experiencing the same thing. And the state patrol is not exempt from that. Governor Walz, on January 3rd, in a press conference where he named some of his commissioners, Commissioner of Public Safety, even talked about this. And I'll quote Governor Walz. He said, "Even the state patrol is having trouble because trooper wages are less than many other officers." Looking ahead, in 2020, it takes over a year to get a trooper recruited, hired, and into the academy. Here's some numbers that should be sobering to you. For the next academy, we're already planning for it. The State Patrol is on the cutting edge as far as trying to recruit and retain other folks. So we have this program that's called LETO, Law Enforcement Training Opportunities. Basically what it does, it hires folks that have a degree in something besides law enforcement, because we recognize people that have another skill. Maybe they were a teacher or a banker or something for a while, but they always had an inkling to be a police officer, especially a trooper. They will be hired by the patrol. Well, here's some poor numbers that you should know. For the upcoming academy, next year's academy, 2020, were 122 fewer LETO candidates than there were for the academy that's going on right now, Camp Ripley. 122 down. And those are not my fingers. Those are from the patrol. Another figure that you should know, in 2018, 17 troopers left state service prior to retirement. Some took higher jobs with other departments. Some took higher paying jobs in the private security sector. And some just simply left law enforcement. However, the fact remains, 17 troopers left their job. Whereas when Mike and I started as troopers, that was almost unheard of. So the problem is real, and it's staring at us. For you folks, that's something you should remember. When those 17 people leave the patrol, they're on about $500,000 just to get them hired and trained through the academy. And again, those are the patrol figures. And that's a very conservative figure. It's about $30,000 to train a trooper from getting hired to going through our state patrol academy.
And Mr. Dello, can you wrap up? I know we have one more testifier as well.
I will. In conclusion, I just want to thank the committee members for the past support. Representative O'Driscoll was a rock star as far as the pension bill. That was extremely important to us. Representative Torkelson, you were a rock star when it came to getting our academy trooper pay up, which was an antiquated law from 1969. Remember, we changed that a few years ago, sir. Representative Hillstrom, who's no longer here, she was instrumental in that as well. MMB will tell you two items. They will say, number one, the trooper wage disparity bill will hurt collective bargaining. That is not true. The other thing MMB will tell you is that the recent contract that Representative Considine referred to will settle all the problems with the trooper's wage. That is not true either. With that, I just want to leave you with one last thing, and this is on a personal note. My wife and I are extremely proud that our son is also a trooper. I retire early next year, so nothing in this bill will even affect me. I'll be retired, and I've earned it, like all my partners behind me. What I'm deathly afraid of for my son and the other young troopers is, are we going to be able to fill those squad cars? Because if we keep losing 17 troopers a year, non-retirement, someone's got to respond to those blizzards and floods and tornadoes. We want people to be there. Please help us out.
Thank you. And then thank you very much for your service and for your testimony. And Mr. Ledoux, if you could state your name for the record, and please be brief because we have another bill after this.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Mike Ledoux, Vice President of the Troopers Association. I've had the privilege of being a state trooper for 25 years. The purpose of this legislation is to provide a sound and comprehensive system for determining compensation for state troopers and to increase retention rates of troopers in order to ensure that well-qualified state patrol force is serving the residents of Minnesota. In 2017, troopers made 650,000 enforcement contacts. As a result of those contacts, only one substantiated internal affairs complaint was filed against troopers. The reason I bring up that statistic is it shows the need to attract a quality candidate. In order to attract the best and brightest candidates for state, the state needs to provide competitive compensation in line with the duties and responsibilities of the position. As Mr. Delvo pointed out, the state experiences a significant loss when well-trained troopers leave the Minnesota State Patrol, as the state invests extensive resources in the recruitment and training of troopers. As a result of the well-documented hiring crisis, experienced law enforcement officers have become free agents, turning to lower-paying agencies into training departments instead of destination departments. The current State Patrol Academy was funded for 46 positions. Unfortunately, out of a total of 947 applicants, only 61 were eligible for hire. And the academy started with 46 people. In the first few weeks of the academy, we lost several of those individuals and are now down to 42 people. The state lacked any alternates to replace those troopers. The loss of these four troopers cannot be minimized. These troopers were badly needed in the field and will take over a year to replace. The Minneapolis police chief said we are at a point of crisis in terms of public safety and men and women joining this very honorable profession. If Minneapolis is having a hiring crisis and paying their officers $94,000 a year, $22,000 more than our troopers, what is the State Patrol having? In regards to fears about collective bargaining, this type of legislation has been implemented in California, Colorado, in Washington in 2018, Montana, Missouri, Texas. The University of Minnesota police used the Stanton comparable group to allow for market adjustments for their police officers. I assure you, collective bargaining is alive and well at the U of M. If we were able to provide our wage disparity data to a city council or county board, I suspect we would have already taken steps to address this public safety issue. Market adjustments have become a necessity to remain competitive. A recent example is the Bemidji Police Department. They raised starting pay 13% in 2019 and top pay by 15%. The City of Duluth and City of St. Paul recently gave their officers substantial increases as well for the same reason. We have attempted to address the wage disparity issue for the last decade and have been unsuccessful. For lack of a better term, we have collective begging. Take what the state offers or go to arbitration since we are essential employees and lack the ability to strike. The men and women of the State Patrol put service before self each day for the security, benefit, and protection of the people as described in the state constitution. Please recognize the service by supporting House File 729 and help the State Patrol remain the premier law enforcement agency in the state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ledoux, and thank you for your service. We have three questions or comments, and then we're going to end this hearing on this particular bill. Representative Hausman, O'Driscoll, and Runbeck. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if my question is to you or to the fiscal analyst, but whether we've ever done this, it looks like the bill is saying by January 1 of each year, the state auditor must conduct a compensation survey. Then they lay out, and then they say the minimum monthly salary must be, and so that's spelled out, and then a couple of years. And I'm just wondering, have we ever done anything like this before where we specify in law, because if they're saying it must be that, though the auditor reports to the House and Senate members, it appears they would have no flexibility.
Question maybe for either Mr. Lee or Mr. Burrison. I don't know if there's anyone from MMB here as well that would want to comment, but Mr. Lee.
It looks as if we're saying the audit prescribes and we don't ever act on other than saying it must be this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I'll have to get back to you on if there's ever been prescriptions of pay rates set in law. I do know that the legislature, when it sets reporting requirements, it has had reports due dates. So I would read that the state auditor would be similar to a reporting requirement, but I'll check and see if there's been anything similar in the language. So.
And we will.
And Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. So the point is, yes, they report, but then on line 123, that's where it says the salary must be. And so it looks as though they report to the chairs, that the chairs don't have much either authority or flexibility.
That's a good
unless
point.
I'm misreading something.
So, Representative Torkelson?
Well, to this point, Mr. Chair, I would just compare it to our own salaries. We appointed a commission that is empowered to establish our salaries. It's not really that different.
Mr. Chair, I think the difference is we still have to enact them. That they make a recommendation to us and we still
so
have
to. So we will also make a formal query to MMB as well on this matter. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping that there would be someone from MMB because my questions are maybe more directed to them.
I don't see anyone, so we'll have to.
Well, then I'll still make my comments absent okay. MMB's ability
Proceed.
To react to
Proceed.
It, as they were referenced. My concern is that, and well, first of all, also, is the chief of the State Patrol present today?
I do not see Colonel Langer here.
Well, in before this committee, members know. The Colonel and I had an interchange with an exchange regarding qualified candidates for law enforcement in general. He and I went through a discussion regarding the academy and the ability to be able to recruit. You're hearing from the members who are there. We are going to have and still do have an employment crisis in law enforcement in the state of Minnesota. And if we can't support our own state of Minnesota state troopers members, there are. We fund them. We are them. We hold them out to all of Minnesota as another branch and agency that will help local law enforcement, whether that be from Brainerd to Bowabic to, you know, pick your next B through Z communities. We're sending a message to Minnesotans about what our priorities are. I think that we need to take this very seriously. And I'll give you a little personal background. Vice Chair Tapke and I are both former mayors. And I don't know the history of the city of Shakopee, but I can tell you about the history of the city of Sartell. My dad was the first police chief in that community, and we were, as you heard these gentlemen talk about, became a training grounds. And we would train officers. My dad would get letters and calls from people going, thanks for doing a great job of training this person that we just hired away from you at a better wage and a better salary. That is what's happening to your state patrol right now in the state of Minnesota. And if you're okay with that, with the state of Minnesota being a training grounds to take people to other communities, then status quo. if you say, no, we want the best and the brightest employed by the state of Minnesota to take care of the people of the state of Minnesota, you got to think a little bit differently about how you want to approach this. It's unfortunate that it has come to having to put legislation in front of the legislature to do the right thing, but sometimes that's what needs to be done. Mr. Chair, I don't have a question. Those are just my thoughts and comments about something I think is very important to the long-term safety and stability of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Representative Runbeck, and then Representative Mason. I'm going to take Representative Runbeck and Representative Mason, and then we do need to move on. We have one more bill, and Representative Joachim for a short comment. I think, unfortunately, we're going to probably take some testimony on Representative Cagle's bill, but with all of this discussion, we'll have to move that till Thursday, I believe. So, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very, very quickly, Mr. Dowell, can you remind us what the total complement of the state troopers is right now?
We don't have a set complement. That's really a question more for the colonel. It's a myth that we have a set complement. Right now, we have 529. We call them road troopers. They're the troopers below the rank of lieutenant. And then I believe we have about 70 supervisors. So Mike and I represent the 529 road troopers.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Representative. No, it's Representative Joachim, if you have a quick question, it's fine. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment and probably just backing up with what Representative O'Driscoll said. I guess my thought is that they should be way higher at the list as well. So we need to figure out what the process is and figure out why we're looking at figures that are so dramatic. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Any other questions or comments? One very quick final comment.
Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee. The State Patrol is unique in that there are things regarding our salary in 299D, which is why this particular item was put there. For example, the pay in which we pay our recruits going into our academy is spelled out in state statute. And I know I don't believe it's been presented yet, but Senator Howe is working on some amendments to Subdivision 2A on the salary survey as well.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Final thoughts, Representative Considine.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein. 650,000 interactions with the public and one substantiated complaint. These are the best in the state of Minnesota. I think would be well within their rights to demand the top salary. What they are asking for is to take the top seven and get starting at 92% and working up to 95%. I think it's reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. So, members, with that, and I appreciate the testimony, I appreciate the questions and the discussion. And with that, we will lay over House File 729 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Cagle, I think we do have some time here at least to get your amendment on and for some public testimony. And if members are willing to stay an extra few minutes, we might be able to get this bill out of committee today. And Ms. Brydick, you can come up. Thank you, troopers.
Thank you.
Representative Cagle, House File 1408, and I think we have three people testifying at the table here. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, but Clara will probably be silent on the bill.
Clara, welcome to the committee.
She's obviously very awake right now. So House File 1408 is the flaggers bill, and so we heard testimony on this on Friday at the Blaine hearing, and right now what we just have is some clarifying language. And so with that, I will turn over to Abby to explain the or Mr. Burris, did you want to explain the amendments for us, please?
We have a DE1 amendment before us, and Representative Cagle moves the DE1. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE1 amendment makes a number of technical and clarifying changes, as well as some kind of modifications around the hands-free and cellular phone use requirements. So Section 1 involves limiting down the paragraph A restrictions that where the petty misdemeanor is clarified and the $300 fine is identified. So that's just applying to flaggers or involving flaggers. And then the language around the reporting of work zone violation and the process authorizing peace officers to perform a stop following that report is set up in a slightly different manner on page 2. You can see the requirements for that set up probable cause on 2.1 to 2.10. And then also on page 2, section 2, this refers to the wireless communications device ban, and this establishes in a somewhat different manner than the original bill that when somebody is part of traffic and in a work zone, they would be prohibited from using a wireless communications device broadly, which would include cellular phone calls. The exceptions for cellular phone call use would therefore not apply while in a work zone, but other exceptions would stay in place. So hands-free would still be permitted under the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Questions of Mr. Burris? And I just wanted to make sure that I did move House File 1408 for a re-referral to Ways and Means. Representative Torgelson, you seem to be angling for a question.
Well, not so much angling for a question, Mr. Chair.
Or comment.
I really think I don't want to rush this bill.
Yeah.
And I would prefer, I'm happy to take some testimony today.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, your committee, Mr. Chair, and you can
do
what you want. But I think perhaps delaying action on this might be appropriate.
We did have testimony in Blaine. I'm willing to extend the hearing a few more minutes, but if it's the Representative Torkelson's preference and if it's okay with the author, we could take this up first thing on Thursday. I guess I would, if we do that, I would ask that if there's any other members of the audience, particularly anyone who's traveled to testify before the committee, this would be an opportunity for that. Is that okay, Representative Cagle, if we just take this up first thing on Thursday?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's fine
okay.
with me.
But again, if anyone has traveled many miles to be with us, I would love to hear from you. Okay. Did you want to testify, Ms. Breida? Because I think what we'll do is we'll be done with testimony on Thursday, and then we can just take the bill up. Ms. Breidick?
Yes, thank you. My name is Abby Breidick. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association, and I just wanted to make sure that we had, if Mr. Burris wanted to clarify the A4 amendment, which is what I'm here to talk about.
So we have a DE1 before us,
right.
And I think at a minimum, if that's okay, Representative Torkelson, I'd like to do the DE1 so we can get the bill and the way the author would like us to consider it on Thursday. That's
where's A4?
Okay. The DE1, why don't you explain that to us, and we'll take action on it.
Mr. Chair, that's what Mr. Burris.
Oh, okay, Mr. Burris. Okay, good. Are there any questions to the DE1?
I don't see it.
Do we have that in the
Yes.
Packet?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. We're just going to make sure. It should be in the packet.
No.
It's in some packets.
I got
a DE1.
I got a DE1.
We have a DE1, but we don't seem to have an additional one after that.
Let's
do the DE1. We have not incorporated that yet. So discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries. And now we have an A3 amendment. Is that an author's amendment as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So why don't we explain the A3?
Mr. Chair, it should be the A4 amendment that we're considering
A4.
That I think
right.
is just being passed out.
We don't have an A4.
The A4 okay. amendment is if you recall, at the Blaine hearing, there was an amendment adopted. The A4 amendment includes that language and also the language that was in the A3 amendment. So the A4 amendment was meant, that language
Ms.
was not
Stahl.
Included. It was not included in the DE, just
okay.
for miscommunication's sake. And so the A4 amendment includes the language on the bid item for flaggers, plus a little tweak that I can explain when you're ready.
Okay. Is there any questions or discussion to the A4, which incorporates the A3? Okay. Yes, Representative Hausman.
Lines 111 and 112, a road authority must include a bid item for flagging hours within the specifications for a live traffic contract.
Ms. Bridek?
Yes.
Or the author?
You just wanted to understand
what that means.
What it means, yes. So what this does is that when MnDOT is putting out for bid a project that would be a paving project that happens in live traffic, and there's a traffic plan that would require flaggers, that they include a bid item in the bid documents that says 100 flagger hours, 50 flagger hours, 200 flagger hours. Right now, there isn't that kind of direction, and a contractor has to estimate on their own how many flagger hours they think they might need, and then they pad the rest of their bid to accommodate those hours. It leaves it up to sort of the low bid competitive process. We want to pull it out and make sure that we don't have sort of a race to the bottom with safety items on a job, and so that everyone's bidding 100 flagger hours, and we make sure we have enough people on the project.
Okay, so that's the explanation of the amendment. Is there discussion? I believe then this is an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to consider
it. Yes, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that we are still working with MnDOT to get this in just the right way we want to, so it most specifically describes the projects on which we'd like the bid item, so it doesn't become required on projects where it's not needed. So on the record, I want to make sure they know that we're still working towards getting it just to the place where we all feel the most comfortable.
Okay. Thank you. Then all those in favor of the A4 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion carries. You know, with that, I've always wanted to do – oh, Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, just a couple of items, just kind of housekeeping items. First, was there a deadline for amendments to this bill in effect?
Well, we had the 24-hour rule, but if you would like to amend this.
No, I would just like to note the time on this last amendment was 8:56 a.m. this morning.
Ah, okay. Well.
And I'm not trying to call it out of order.
I wasn't
anything, Mr.
aware
Chair.
Of that.
But along with that, I just assume that when this bill comes back up on Thursday that we could still be able to amend, submit amendments before
Absolutely.
Thursday.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will have a 24-hour rule. And Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, just so that the committee is aware, part of that is on me and getting everything set up for the committee. So the delete all amendment did not include the language that had been adopted by the committee previously in the A1 amendment, and I had some delay in putting together the language to then go against the delete all. And so I just hadn't gotten that put together until this morning.
Thank you. And I'm not trying to make a big fuss of it.
No. But it's helpful to know. And so, but we will, you know, we're continuing. I've always wanted to.
Just one other kind of process question along with that. Will this be re-engrossed before the Thursday hearing? I'm just not sure how we're doing things.
Mr. Burris, do you have a thought on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, there's not typically an engrossment reflecting committee activity on a bill that's laid over. However, a working document could be put together that shows all of the language in one document. If the committee would like to be able to see that for the hearing, for purposes of further amendments, that wouldn't be the document to amend against, but it could be a kind of informational supplement if desired.
Thank Representative you. Torkelson, would you?
Thank
would
you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris. I would request a whatever we call it.
An informational
supplement be assembled to help us work through this bill.
Duly noted. Representative Hausman.
And it does seem maybe we should have MnDOT at that meeting, because particularly this last amendment raised, it sounds like because they're part of this conversation, maybe we need to be certain that they're at the table.
Good. That's a good suggestion, Representative Hausman. So technically we're laying this bill over, but members, I've always wanted to do this one. I move that the calendar for the day be continued. No, we don't do that in committee, but do you have any thoughts as we contemplate this over the next 48 hours, Representative Cagle?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you guys
So
the bill is in that now the form that the author would like us to consider it, and with that, House File 1408 is laid over for continued discussion on Thursday. Members, we will recess until 7 tonight. There is a possibility that several of us will be arriving late from a Ways and Means hearing, so Representative Tabke will be convening the meeting in that event. And we have a couple of bills and several amendments to those bills. We, you know, depending on our quorum, we may be taking public testimony first and the bills second, which is a reversal of how we've done our field hearing. So I just wanted to let people know that. And we may have, we may have another chair convening the meeting if when Representative Tabby presents his bill. So with that, members, we're adjourned. Recess. We're recessed.